Welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, a weekly news digest covering events in Israel. It's relevant and accurate information you need to know, direct from the Holy Land. You're listening to Front Page Jerusalem.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, the voice of Israel to the world, brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel in the city of the great king, Jerusalem. I'm Earl Cox. Ben Kenchlow is on assignment.
And I'm Kevin Howard in Jerusalem.
Throughout the centuries, numerous archaeological discoveries around the globe have shed light on civilizations past and the unique history of mankind. From ancient burial sites in hard-to-reach places to artifacts hidden within monuments made to rulers, and even treasures found where civilizations were completely wiped off the planet. The mystery surrounding the Copper Scroll was not as much the actual Hebrew writings it contained, but rather the information that the writer of the scroll was trying to convey. Kevin Howard brings us an amazing discussion with Jim Barfield, a retired criminal fire investigator and founder of the Copper Scroll Project. We'll bring you that interview in just a moment, but first, let's go to the CFI Jerusalem News Desk, where David Milburn has the recent headlines from Israel. David?
Thanks, Earl. Bill Ford, executive chairman of automaker Ford Motor Company, officially opened the Ford Research Center in Tel Aviv this week to tap into Israel's vast wealth of innovative mobility startups. The new center, located in southern Tel Aviv, will serve as a research incubator that will work with Ford's research and development teams around the world to enhance the capabilities of Ford products by identifying technologies and startups in connectivity, sensors, vehicle interior monitoring, and cyber protection. The lack of hierarchy makes Israel a really great place to start up and makes your voice heard early in the process, he said, in reference to Israeli business culture, which encourages open communication and is less hierarchical than in the US and Europe. Now, before we return to Earl, here's today's This Page in History.
On July 11, 1859, General John Maxwell, organizer of the Zion Mule Corps, was born. This British commander met Russian emigres who were partnering with the British Empire to wrest Palestine out of the hands of the Ottoman Empire during World War I. He was unable to enlist foreign nationals as fighting troops, but he could form them into a volunteer transport mule corps. He began recruiting volunteers from among the Jews in Egypt who had been deported there by the Ottomans. The Zion Mule Corps served as the basis on which the Jewish Legion was formed, the first such military unit organized since the Bar Kokhba revolt 2,000 years previous. They had a distinctively Jewish emblem and flag and took part actively in a war which they had a vested interest. The current IDF and Border Patrol defending the soil of a sovereign, democratic, and Jewish Israel on the land of Palestine can look back to this era as the seed of its noble origins.
Welcome back, everybody. Even today's archaeological discoveries around the world continue to enlighten us on history's past. However, for those adhering to biblical scripture, the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls was a unique moment in time. Along with the papyrus scrolls, a final discovery was that of the scroll made completely of copper that contained an interesting mystery. Kevin Howard recently spoke with Jim Barfield to find out more.
Thanks, Earl. I am talking today with Mr. Jim Barfield. He's a retired criminal fire investigator, and he's now a researcher. Jim, thanks for being our guest today on Front Page Jerusalem.
With my pleasure, and it's really great. The author, Shelley Neese, I told her I was doing an interview with you guys, and she was very excited.
Jim, you've done a lot of research on the Copper Scroll. Tell us what it is and where was it found?
The Copper Scroll is exactly what it sounds like. It's a scroll made out of a sheet of copper. It's almost pure copper. It's one of the most pure alloys of copper around, especially from that time frame, which was approximately the time of Jeremiah. And it is an incredible document. It gives the locations, directions to some of the most amazing treasures. I believe the temple and tabernacle treasure. No, I'm sure of it. Just put it that way. I'm sure that that's what it is.
So is the Copper Scroll important to Christianity then?
It's incredibly important to Christianity. If Christianity believes that they're the coming bride, well, so does my Jewish brothers. They believe that as well. And matter of fact, it was a Jewish gentleman, after I presented my research to him, at first he was really reluctant that some fireman from Lawton, Oklahoma would have discovered how to understand such an important document. But after I got through about four locations, my friend, he was excited. He said, "Mr. Barfield, do you realize what this is and how important this is to my people?" I said, "Yes." I said, "It's just as exciting and important to my people." But he told me this. He said, "This is the dowry for the coming bride." And it just lit up inside of me that he's right, that these items were prepared and stored away by the prophet Jeremiah to prepare for the coming bride in the distant future. And all you have to do is identify what they're talking about within that set of ruins.
So, Jim, tell us, how did a retired fire investigator get involved in solving the mystery of the Copper Scroll?
Oh, really, really simple. It's the beginning of it was my Bible study. I am an intense Bible studier. I love to get into the deep meanings of Scripture. And a gentleman by the name of Vendel Jones, he invited me to his home in Texas. We went there, my wife and I went there, and he started pointing out the Copper Scroll to me. I had already read it years before, but it was of no interest to me. It was just a laundry list. It tells you, go here, look here, go this deep, and you'll find these treasures. It was a treasure map, as far as I was concerned, of no interest. But, oh, my goodness, once I got into it, I realized that this is much more than a treasure map. This gave instructions in how to find the most important, most valuable items in biblical history.
So with such a long time frame involved, how do you stay current and maintain focus on what's obviously a long-term project? How do you keep it fresh?
That's a very, very good question. But let me tell you something. I taught at a congregation in Dallas on Shabbat this last weekend. And a guy came up to me and he said, "Mr. Barfield, I saw your presentation 10 years ago, 11 years ago. He said, you are as excited today as you were then." He said, "I love that." And he's right. There's no dwindling of excitement. There's no having to re-inspire myself. I stay excited about this day after day, night after night. When I say my prayers early in the morning, I pray that the Father will continue to keep us within His will to accomplish this in a way that He would be honored. So it's easy to stay excited and to stay motivated.
So tell our listeners what makes you so sure that you've found out how to understand this very strange document.
It's like Jeremiah said, it's like a fire down in my bones. It's something I can't ignore. It's something that just is so intense with me. I can't explain it. And honestly, I'm going to be honest with you. I was a very good investigator, arson investigator. And you have to dig through ruins and figure out clues to figure out what happened. Were they guilty, not guilty, and who did it? Well, that's the way I feel to this day. And I believe the Father gave me this information. It was too easy. When I made the discovery 12 years ago, it was so easy. It's not some complicated mystical Kabbalah type document. It's something simple. You ever heard of Occam's razor? It's a theory of the most simple solution to a problem is the most likely the correct answer. And that's what this was a very simple solution to what looked like a complicated problem. And that's really how it all came about. I mean, when you look at the research, and I provide maps, I provide pictures of each and every location, and I provide the translation for it so that you can look at, I simply look at the page and you can see exactly what I'm talking about. each one of these locations and features of the buildings at Qumran match the description on the copper scroll. So it's the simplicity for one thing. And then there was a deputy speaker of the Knesset that went to Qumran with me. And under his authority, we did a scan of Qumran. And we scanned four locations. I was shaking like a leaf when we went back to, we went to En Gedi from Qumran. We drove down the road about 15 minutes, and we came to En Gedi, and there's a large canopy there. We got underneath it at the picnic tables. We opened the research up with the program that actually reads it and puts it in graphic format. Oh, my goodness. There was a huge amounts at each one of the locations that I scanned at Qumran. It was crazy. It was so exciting.
Jim, have you actually had the chance to dig in Israel? As Israel has very strict antiquities laws, how could a non-archaeologist manage an excavation?
Well, what happened was there was a lady here in Oklahoma that was number two at the Comanche Nation College here in my hometown. She invited me to speak since I was teaching there as an investigative report writer. I was teaching some classes there, and she invited me to talk about the project at a noonday luncheon that they have periodically. After I spoke, she saw that I was how exciting it was, and she knew a gentleman from Israel. It just so happened that she was a good friend. Her and her ex-husband were good friends with Shuka Dorfman, the head of the Antiquities Authority of Israel. Now, how does that happen? She got me in touch with him. I went and spoke with Shuka Dorfman at his office. Actually, the first time we met was at the Citadel Hotel overlooking the old city. I showed him. He thought I was a nut. Shuka Dorfman then invited me to the Citadel Hotel where we sat down. He reviewed my research, and he fell in love with it. Shuka then invited me to come back to the Rockefeller Museum on Tuesday. It was Friday afternoon when I talked to him the first time. He invited me a few days later after Shabbat. He invited me to this Rockefeller Museum where I disclosed this information to Yitzhak Magen and Yuval Peleg. Yitzhak Magen is the head of the antiquities for the West Bank and for the Gaza Strip. He arranged. He provided the excavators, the diggers. He provided all the equipment. They were so interested in my research that they wanted to do a preliminary excavation at Qumran to see what we could find. Guess what? We got to working on it, and we got about 3 feet. Not a good situation. I mean, we got all of our people there. We were ready, and they shut us down way before we got to a level where we could determine if something was actually there. So, yes, we did dig, but we certainly didn't dig deep enough. 3 feet is not deep enough to determine whether they buried the most important items in the world there.
As so many new discoveries in Israel and the greater Middle East directly point to the accuracy and authenticity of the Bible, Christians around the world need to continue in their commitment to pray for the nation and people of Israel. Right now, though, we need to take a short break so you can hear about an incredible outreach project of Christian Friends of Israel that's making a tangible difference in the lives of so many people in Israel today.
After years of planning and a long, tiring journey, you have finally arrived home in a new land, Israel, the land of your ancestors. Now the task of building a new life with only the things you brought with you begins. A friend mentions a lighthouse distribution center and something called Open Gates. Curious, you go. On arriving, you hear welcome in your native language from smiling and cheerful volunteers. After telling a bit about yourself, you're given a beautiful gift basket of brand new necessities for your home. Then, the volunteers invite you to browse the plentifully, gently used clothing hanging on nearby racks. Having only brought one large suitcase, the selection and variety presented are like a dream. You look around at others just like you, even families with little children. The staff help you find everything you need, and too soon, the visit is finished. But it's okay. Open Gates will be there with their gates wide open for your next visit.
Christian Friends of Israel's project, Open Gates. Just one more way we're making a difference in Israel, one life at a time. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to our continuing discussion between Front Page Jerusalem's Kevin Howard and Jim Barfield as they talk about the interesting mystery of the copper scrolls found in 1952, directly after the historic discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Thanks again, Earl. And for those of you who might be just joining us, I am today with Mr. Jim Barfield. He's a retired criminal fire investigator turned researcher. Jim, what's the most convincing piece of evidence that you have that assures that the treasures are still at an identified site?
The main one is the research. Again, it matches so incredibly well with Qumran. I mean, once people see it, they are convinced. I did a presentation to the head of Masada, the head of Qumran, the head of the National Parks Authority, the lead archaeologist for the National Parks Authority, and they all were in agreement that there is a high probability that my research was correct. But there's also, we found mortar as we were digging at the cave that I just talked about where Bing opened up, and it terrified him. He thought, oh my gosh, there is a cave here, because it looked like three shelves or two shelves made of mortar or concrete. More like mortar that you put between bricks, between stones when you're building a masonry wall. It looked like concrete to me. It looked like mortar because I'd seen it. I'd worked with it many times, but he disagreed. The archaeologist disagreed. No, that's not what it is. Well, I took a piece of that and we sent it to Skokie, Illinois, and to a scientific laboratory there. It cost me a lot of money to get it tested, but it was worth it. Because they came back with the determination that this piece of stone and mortar mix was more likely to be man-made than natural form. And so what he did was they went into a scientific explanation that I didn't understand of why they thought it was man-made. And then I brought another gentleman from Israel. I took him out there to the same site and we looked at it. And he told me, he said, Mr. Barfield, This is man-made. He said, I can't word it that way, that definitely. So he provided me with a document, and that document said almost identical to what the laboratory in Skokie, Illinois said. That and the scan that we did with the deputy speaker of the Knesset, and it providing information that showed large amounts of non-ferrous metals at the same locations where I believed that these items would be at. So those are the top three main reasons why we're so confident.
So tell us how many hoards of treasure there are described on this copper scroll, and are there any significant patterns formed by the locations in which they're buried?
Yes, I can. There are 57, according to my research, there are 57 locations at Qumran, and there are patterns. As a matter of fact, listen to this. The first three locations are in a perfectly straight line, and they end at the cave that I was just describing, where we only dug 3 feet. Ridiculous. We can't find anything 3 feet. And then the last five locations, 53, 54, 55, 56, and 57 is the exact same location as number three. And it points to the exact same spot. You know, people say, well, X never marks the spot. Well, it doesn't. But a V did, because it formed a V, a very sharp V, pointing to this same location that we're talking about here. So, yes, there were patterns that proved what we were trying to say.
So, in your opinion, Jim, what's the most important treasure buried at the ruins?
Second Maccabees. It's a Jewish document. In Second Maccabees, the second chapter says that the tabernacle of Moses, all the implements of the tabernacle and the temple, including the Ark of the Covenant, are buried inside of a location. I'm not going to say that it's there, absolutely. We have to dig and determine that by digging. But the description says that Jeremiah was on his way from Jerusalem to bury and to hide these locations. He buried it on his way to Mount Nebo. And Qumran is just a little ways out of the way if you're on your way to Mount Nebo from Jerusalem. And depending on which path you take, you go right past Qumran. So could he have buried it at Qumran? Absolutely, he could have. Because I believe that Qumran, listen, is the home of the prophets. Jeremiah was the lead prophet at that time. He was in charge, and he delegated the authority to bury these things at Qumran. So the most important things, there is a high probability that the implements of the tabernacle are inside of that cave. Those are the most valuable, but there is probably a few tons of gold and silver inside of that cave as well. I believe that the reason that the Israeli government is not digging to test it is because of the location that it's in. And it is a Solomonic, meaning it was actually during the Solomonic temple, Temple of Solomon, that these items were buried. And they are very, very, with respect to them, they're very reluctant to admit that there's anything found that is dated at the time of the King Solomon, the first temple period. So they are very reluctant to do that. And what if we did find these things and they were inside of the West Bank? There's three levels of security in the West Bank. There's Area A, B, and C. Area A is strictly Palestinian. Area B is a combination of Israeli-Palestinian control, but Area C, where Qumran is at, is under Israeli control. But it is contested territory. To me, all of Israel is Israel, but to the Egyptians, to the Palestinians in particular. But if we found these things, Egypt would want them. And why is that? Because the story in the Exodus that we just read in the Torah readings is Egypt provided all the gold and silver gems for the implements. Jordan owned the territory at the time that the copper scroll was found. And matter of fact, Jordan still owns the copper scroll. It's sitting in Amman, Jordan right now in a museum. The Palestinians will want it, of course. They want everything. And there's multiple religions that would want it as well. So the biggest issue is the political repercussions that will come to it from a discovery like that.
So in your opinion, do you feel that maybe God has set a time schedule for this and he's not going to vary from that timing?
Oh, not even me. No, he is. Yes. His timetable is set. It's set. And every night when I wake up at about 3 a.m, I pray about this and I say, Father, please let us get these things done. Let me do this right and then in a way that is honoring to you. And Father, please let us get it done. But I end it with this: not my will, but your will be done in this operation. You know, I was just approached by a publishing company. They want to publish my research. Of course, we have the book out by, you know, written by Schilling, the Copper Scroll Project book. But they're wanting more. They're wanting to see, for me to show the research. And I believe it's almost time. With that being said, yes, I believe that the Father has an exact time frame. And the research that I can release, I'm getting to the time where I can release my research without worrying about, you know, everybody in there and the dog going out there digging at Qumran to dig up precious temple treasures.
Mr. Jim Barfield, you can find out more about him at copperscrollproject.com. Jim, thank you for being our guest today on Front Page Jerusalem.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kevin, for that interesting, very interesting and informative discussion with Jim Barfield about the significance of the copper scroll found in Israel less than 70 years ago and the unique mystery it holds for the future ahead. Well, our time is almost up for this week, but before we go, let's hear from David Nekretman with this week's Bible on the Go. But first, another visit to the CFI Jerusalem News Desk with David Milburn.
Thanks again, Earl. German and Israeli scientists have discovered a 1,700-year-old stone bearing the name of a city believed to be the possible location of an ancient biblical town. The Greek inscription refers to the city of Elusa and was discovered during excavations in Halutza National Park in the Negev Desert. The name of the city appears in a number of historical documents and contexts, including the Madaba mosaic map and other historical references. However, this is the first time that the name name of the city has been discovered in the site itself. The inscription mentions several Caesars, which allow to date it around 300 CE. The Israeli Antiquities Authority said Wednesday in a press release. The city is one of the two main potential locations for the biblical city of Ziklag. Ziklag is mentioned in Genesis, Joshua, and Samuel. Now, before we return to Earl, here's David Nekrupman with this week's Bible on the Go.
Recently, I had to interview someone for a position within my organization. Armed with the person's resume and a list of questions to see if I had the right person for the job, a thought popped into my head. Hey, did Abraham ever submit a resume to God? In fact, he didn't. There actually is nothing to indicate prior to the Genesis 12 episode for God's selection of Abraham. Oh, sure, we know about Abraham's lineage, marriage, and his wife's inability to conceive. However, there is no character trait that stands out as the reason for him to be the covenant carrier. In most English renditions of Genesis 12:1, the translation of the verse is, "The Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land that I will show you." However, these translations leave out a key word from the Hebrew, lecha, for you. The translation should be, God said to Abram, go for yourself. This teaches us a great lesson that God was not ordering Abraham to leave it all behind like a sergeant speaking to a private, but giving him a choice to gain greater spiritual gifts. In order for Abraham to continue his outreach work for God beyond the comforts of his home, it would require shedding all the influences of his birthplace and eradicating the pagan influences of his own home. God's challenge to Abraham is a challenge to every one of us. It's not just going physically from one place to another, but about making a spiritual movement within oneself. Without a destination, Abraham does not take a leap of faith, but a leap of action to do something without understanding why. May we be inspired by Abraham's leap of action and tap into the incredible growth he experienced as well as the blessings he received. This is David Nekrupman with Bible on the Go.
Thanks, David. Well, that's our show for today. We hope that you've enjoyed the program, everybody. And thanks for joining us. And please don't forget to support this station because it supports Israel. But before we go, let me invite you to join us on this same station again next week as we bring you all the latest news from Israel and the Middle East. So for now, on behalf of the entire staff of Front Page Jerusalem, I'm Earl Cox, reminding you that because God loves Israel, I do too.
You've been listening to Front Page Jerusalem. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com. Front Page Jerusalem is brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel Jerusalem, making a difference in Israel one life at a time. Front Page Jerusalem is a production of Level E Media Incorporated.